Fucking get my mode on.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Baywatch Podcast. This is episode 5 of the show. And I am here with my lovely wife, Mrs. Pam. How you doing tonight, baby?
Great.
Doing great over there?
Yep.
Okay. Getting in your mode.
Come on, man.
Yo, man, so it's been a few weeks since we last did a show. We've been kind of busy, like getting in the way somewhat. But that doesn't mean that we weren't out here watching movies and watching television shows and trying to figure out what the hell we was going to talk to y'all about. So we found one movie that we wanted to go see, at least I wanted to go see, The Hate U Give. And we're going to give our view on that tonight. But before we get into all of that, of course, we got to let you guys know how to get in touch with us here at the Baywatch Podcast. Let your voices be heard here. Go ahead and hit up that hotline, area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave us a voicemail message. We'll play them on the show and respond to them right here. You can also email us at feedback@thebaywatchpod.com. That's feedback@thebaywatchpod.com. I'm sorry, the Baywatch Podcast. Jesus Christ, I keep messing that up. Thebaywatchpodcast.com. Hit us up at feedback@thebaywatchpodcast.com. Leave us those emails. We'll read those emails here live on the show and respond to you as well. Also, chop it up with us on Twitter. My name is Mr. Underscore Span, and your name on there is what, babe?
Podcast Bay.
Man, you sound so excited. So, yeah, man, hit us up on these Twitter streets. Follow us and chop it up with us throughout the week. Also, man, go to the website at the TheBaywatchPodcast.com. Go there. Well, you can't watch replays of the show because we don't do this show live. But you can go there and vote and pose, leave comments on the show. And you can listen on the website as well if you don't have a podcast catcher or anything else. But you can catch this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We're on Spotify as well. So go ahead and subscribe that way if that's how you listen to music and podcasts. Real talk. But, yeah, we're going to get right into this review. And, of course, like I said, we were watching or we saw The Hate U Give this past weekend. And, of course, as we start every show, I got to ask you, babe, like, what was your overall impressions of the film? How'd you like it?
I understand what it was, what it was and what it was supposed to be, but I wasn't that into it. I mean, okay, I was into it because I felt like there were some parts that were good, but I wasn't that into it. Like, I wasn't as into it as I want to, like, pretend to be for the culture. Like,
you don't have to pretend.
I mean, like, I get it, you know, I get the point. I get what they were trying to say, but it was just, like, missing something to me a little bit. I don't know.
Okay. So, I think I went into this movie with high expectations, and those expectations were not met.
But this is, like, your jam, though. This is right up your little alley.
I hear you, babe, but I think...
The subject matter, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, to a certain
degree. It's something that I'm
engaged in. It's something that I talk about quite often. I think when I saw the trailers, you know, from the first few times we saw the trailers, when we would go to the movies and see the trailers and what, I'm like, oh, man, that looked like it could be good.
See, I was like, oh, no. Well, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm probably going to have to go see this because this thing ain't going to want to go see this shit. Like, clearly, I already knew that you was going to carry your ass down to the theater.
I wanted to see this film because I thought it, you know, I felt like it was relevant. You know, the subject matter was relevant to what we're dealing with today. And so I did want to go see this film. But overall, though, I feel like I went in there with higher expectations and the film didn't necessarily deliver on those expectations. It was a decent film. But it wasn't like some earth shattering or even should I say like, I left out of this film a little bit disappointed. And we're going to kind of get into this now, man. So basically, this movie is based on a book written by author Angie Thomas. Okay. I did not know this going into this movie.
Oh, you didn't know.
I didn't know this. It was apparent to me, though, when the movie starts out and the girl is narrating the story. Like, a lot of times when they come out and there's a narration going on, like, there's a book somewhere surrounding this a lot of times. That's just usually how I feel about it. Like, there's usually a book surrounding it, and then there's someone reading and narrating the story. I always feel like there's a book somewhere around this film. And sure enough, there was a book that this film was based on. And it's about this young girl named Star Carter, who basically lives in the hood, Garden Heights, and she goes to school in the suburbs. Lily White area, you know, like, you know, really suburban, well-to-do, kind of upper middle class, I would say. I mean, the kids are driving Range Rovers and shit to school and that kind of thing. And, you know, we get this impression that Star isn't being herself. She's got this whole thing where she's...
We don't get an impression. She clearly says that she's not being herself.
Okay, babe. Thank you. But she's code switching. That's pretty much what that was. She's code switching or whatever else. And off top, I'm kind of like, okay, we're going to deal with a lot of cliches in this film. And I felt like right off of that, like right off the top with the whole thing with the Jordans and, you know, the white people being stereotypically cool or trying to be cool because they're around a black person. Her not necessarily wanting to be herself in that setting. I felt like it was very stereotypical. Like, I'm like, okay, I could see that. It was as if they were trying to convey the message, but the message was like really heavy handed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I felt like the characters were kind of like heady. Like, they were like too kind of, I don't know if it was like the writing, but they were too kind of stuck in their own like separate tropes to really kind of go deeper into the story. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, like the dad, like I thought that he did a great job, like that he did some acting. Mm-hmm. But I feel like
that was Russell Hornsby who played Maverick Carter.
I feel like had he not been so tied to that, like, I'm a ex gang banger type of situation, he maybe could have gone a little bit deeper into that character, and I would have liked to see a little bit more from that. And like, I especially felt that with Regina Hall, like the mom.
Yeah, Lisa Carter.
I felt like she was definitely like the trope of like the sassy but strict mom who's like super loving at the end of it all. Like, mm-hmm. She was definitely like kind of like yoked in that. Like, she wasn't, I felt like she just couldn't, like push through maybe that kind of stereotype to be something more to the story.
Yeah. I really felt like, you know, there was the whole idea of them being like the, you know, the opposites attract, mom and dad. Like, you know, mom is like this kind of, I don't know, like they talked about her mom being sent away to a school, something similar to the one that they went to.
Yeah.
And getting out of the hood, and, you know, Maverick being, you know, that hood dude who got out of the game because, you know, something happened in his past where he ended up doing some time for somebody else.
Yeah,
and then his pass out of the game was, okay, I done did this time, buy me this store. And he's got this neighborhood store, and that's pretty much, you know, how he's done the straight life, so to speak. One of the things that, I forgot the question I was going to ask you just now. I hate when this happens.
I don't know.
I hate when this happens. I got this question right. It's lying right on up, and it just poof, gone.
Well, while you're thinking about that, I mean, I did kind of feel Star when she was talking about like acting, not act. She didn't say acting white, but that's basically what she was doing. Like, and then, you know, her schoolmates and stuff. Her one friend, Haley, I think it was, like, kind of at a certain point in the movie kind of told her, like, you're, like, the unthreatening black, you're, like, the non-threatening black girl, like, you're different or whatever. And, like, being a person who, I could feel that, like, I mean, my day in high school, my day was literally divided between, like, regular-ass high school, like, And while my high school was not, like, the high school in the hood, like, I mean, I hung out with all black people at high school. Yeah. And then for the afternoon, I went to a performing arts high school and did, like, dance and musical theater, mm-hmm. which is, like, a totally different type of animal as opposed to, like, the morning I'm hanging out with, like, you know, like, the football niggas, my cheerleader friends, and, like, you know, like, the popping crew. And then, like, I go to this other school and I'm like, you know, talking about scientific hypotheses as they apply to dance and theater and such. Like, so you know, I could kind of get that and like having the experience of like, oh, you talk white or you're different than other black girls. Like I've had the experience recently, like at work, where people have told me like, oh, you're quiet, but like, you're not ratchet. You're not like other black girls. So like I could understand where she was coming from. I mean, but I didn't think they did a very good job of connecting that piece to the greater kind of theme of the film. Like, I understood why they were focusing on how the white people were treating her and how she was behaving and kind of being in that kind of scene. But to me, there was something that kind of like failed to connect that to like the greater, you know, kind of piece of the movie.
Well, I think when they were, you know, kind of laying the groundwork for the, you know, her life in this white world and the code switching that she was doing, you know, whether it was being at that school or whether she was kicking in the hood with her friends. I just felt like it was heavy handed. Like, I felt like this is going to be a problem later.
Like, when the dude was like, those kicks are lit.
Like, yeah, like, I'm just like, yeah, okay.
And they were, like, dancing and, like, doing, like, the fucking blood handshake and doing all type of shit. I'm like, but this is the thing, though. This is how kids that age, like, this is how they behave. Mm-hmm. Like, if you ever have just been to a mall on a Saturday and had the unfortunate experience of like being surrounded by like rich white kids, and these kids are so, they're wealthy and they're buying into like the, what they think Drake is going to do. And like, they're buying into like black culture. They want to be a part of it and they have the money to do so. So these kids, like these, especially like these rich white kids, like out by my job, like, that's how they behave.
Right.
And, but the thing is, like, no one is there to, like, to check them. And also, the question is, do we really need to? Are they being offensive? Like, if you ain't walking around saying the N-word, are you being offensive? Are you doing this to be rude? Are you doing this, like, do you like rap music because you just like it? Like.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, if you're going to be in those circles, and it bothers you, maybe you should say something, but I guess it's all in how you say things.
I think for us as adults, yes, we would say something, but I don't think a lot of kids, normal average Joe, you know, middle class kids, I don't think like I can't see Kimaya being like, why are you acting white? She'll just probably laugh. Like, I feel like she would really just laugh. Like,
she may laugh at
She
him.
Would probably laugh. I don't think she would take it. I don't think she would be offended.
Well, you know, like the way that her school is made up, though, is more so like black and Latino kids. There's not a whole lot of white kids that go to her school. Mm. So it may not necessarily be as big an issue at her school as if she were going to, you know, a school out in Troy or Novi or somewhere like that. So you got that going on. But there was, we pretty much get kind of introduced to them, this family, this Carter family, where Maverick sets the Black Panther Party's 10-point program in front of his three kids, Seven and
Sakani.
And Star. And he wants them to learn the 10-point program, but he's also talking to them about how to deal with the police and how to conduct yourself when you get pulled over by the police and everything else. And, you know, of course, it was like, this is the talk. Did you ever get the talk about how to interact with the police?
That wasn't a thing like, it was a thing, but it wasn't like a thing in where I lived and where I'm from. It was a thing more, it was more for boys, like my older brother and like my cousins and stuff probably mm-hmm. did. But like for me, it wasn't, like my parents didn't really talk to me about that.
I never really.
And also where I'm from, that wasn't a thing that people really worried about. Mm-hmm. It was more so a thing, like when I would come and visit like my grandma and stuff, like she would say things to me about like, you know, just like keep your head down and like whatever else. But like in my hometown, that wasn't like a big worry that we had.
Right. Well, I know for me, I can't remember ever really getting the talk. I can't remember ever really getting it.
I don't think that was, see, I don't think when we were kids that was a, like, I think that their police was still killing motherfuckers. Like, police was still doing dirt and, you know, killing unarmed black people. But I don't think that, I don't know if it was, like, our parents were not as, like, aware or focused on it. Or it wasn't such, like, an epidemic. Or we didn't, it was an epidemic, but do we recognize it as an epidemic, as a society?
No, people weren't really paying as much attention to it. And the only time I could ever remember anybody ever having anything to say about the police, typically was when like a real big story kind of happened. Like, so yeah. When you got Rodney King getting beat down on video, or then like here in Detroit, like not too long after Rodney King, Malice Green was beaten to death by the police. But like, again, like, I can't remember ever really getting that talk. I don't remember my mother ever sitting me and my brother down and saying, well, this is how you conduct yourself with the police. As a matter of fact, I remember, like, the D.A.R.E. program.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, being, you know, in the fifth grade and Officer Goodwin coming in and talking to us and teaching us about drugs and drugs are bad and, you know, peer pressure and, you know, they're going to try to pressure you into smoking weed and weed can lead to all these other things. Yeah, I feel
like weed came up kind of, and you probably more so than me, came up in, like, the war on drugs era.
Yeah, I definitely did.
More than, you know, I don't know what it was for me. Shit.
Yeah. But not the interesting thing about that, though, is like, okay, so coming out of fifth grade, I'm 10 years old, I don't really have the negative perception of police that, you know, some kids may have now at 10 years old. But I, like, not too long after that, after eighth grade, I'm out in front and, you know, out in front of a friend's house playing basketball, and the police pull up, and now there's a drug raid, and they're pulling everybody in his house, me included. And a police officer jumping out of the truck, you know, out of the van and putting a 12 gauge to my head and told me to run, see if you can outrun this slug. So that, like, it goes from, well, damn, but Officer Goodwin said,
yeah.
And I'm just out here playing basketball. And like, you know, to have that sort of interaction at 13, you know, again, never having had that talk, that does color your perception of police going forward. Because before, I looked at the police as that was my friends. Now it's, well, not necessarily friends, but, you know, like, they were looking out.
They were there to help.
They were looking out. Like, the police are here to look out for us. And then, you know, like, I'm the motherfucker that they're supposed to be, you know, protecting everybody else from now. You know, it was a jarring kind of experience. So, like, I saw that scene, and although I've heard about the talk, I hear people talk about them giving their kids the talk, I never got to talk when I was young.
Yeah, I think that's a thing that's more recent.
Yeah. So we find out a little bit more about this family dynamic because apparently Maverick has, you know, he does have three kids. There's Seven and then there's Sakani. But Seven was actually the result of an affair with this other woman. What was her name? Let me pull up her name.
Who knows?
Was it Brenda? No, it wasn't Brenda. Okay. King's girlfriend.
Yeah.
King is who he was, like, leading the King Lords gang with.
They couldn't have came up with nothing else.
I mean, come on, babe. Vice Lords is already taken.
Okay, but still.
I mean, Latin Kings are already taken.
They could have said something else.
I mean, you know, it's a gang name. You know, you got to come up with a generic gang name sometimes. But King is apparently the he's the drug overlord. He's the, you know, he's that nigga in the hood, right? If you going, if anything's going down in the hood, King's probably got his hand in it, and we are introduced to him and that whole family dynamic, because King is actually with the woman whom Maverick had Seven with. So there's that whole convoluted thing there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we move on to, like, there's this the juxtaposition between her life in this white school to her life in the hood, and she's going to this party in the hood. Her friend, no, it wasn't Haley. Her friend Kenya. Her friend Kenya is, like, at this party, and, you know, she is, for lack of a better word, kind of ratchet, kind of with the shit, you know, yeah. As far as, like, you know, like, as far as, like, hood drama and everything else. Her father is a drug dealer. Her mama really doesn't give a shit. They kick it all night or whatever. Kind of, like, giving the stereotypical, like, yo, she really is kind of raising herself kind of thing. And, of course, like, there's this girl at the party that she's got a problem with. She's, like, plotting on jumping on this girl. She's asking Star whether or not she wants to be a part of this jumping. And Star's like, nah, I'm good. But they separate at this party. And while they're at the party, Khalil walks in. Mm-hmm. Now, Khalil is a friend of Star's from, like, when they were, like, young. Like, really young. Her and another friend were, like, really close. The other friend was actually killed when they were really young. But they hadn't seen each other for quite some time. But Khalil, like, you know, he comes to the party. They're talking. They're catching up. And a shooting happens at the party. And they leave the party hurriedly. They leave the party hurriedly and everything, like, to try to get away and everything else. They pull over. After they left the party, they were having this conversation about Tupac, because he's playing this, you know, playing some old Tupac music, and she's kind of clowning about the music, and they start talking about Thug Life and the acronym around Thug Life and what Thug Life means. I think they said the hate you give, the little infants fucks everybody. And okay, this is another, like, kind of pet peeve of mine too. Like, I kind of hate when, like, they repeatedly say the name of the movie in the movie. Like, and that shit happened a few times.
Yeah.
And I was just like, come on, man. Like, we get it. It was like, you know, they kept talking about the hate you give, and they kept referencing Tupac and Thug Life and stuff like that. But they were talking about it. And then, of course, you know, Khalil, you know, expresses his feelings for Star. He wants to be more than friends with Star, but she reveals that she has a boyfriend. Didn't tell him that the boyfriend was a white dude, but she tells him he got a boyfriend. He's like, I know, you know, I see you at school and stuff like that, and, you know, I'm cool with it, whatever. Right after this, though, they're driving off, and then they get pulled over. Okay, something's popping off on the computer. But they get pulled over by the police, right? And Khalil is really agitated with this stop. You know, the police says he pulled, you know, you didn't signal while changing lanes or some shit like that. Trust me, that is some bullshit. Whenever they tell you that is the reason they pulled you over. But yo, he's getting really agitated with this cop. Like, yo, man, you ain't got to do all this, man. Why I got to turn my music down? And the cop's getting really agitated. He's got his hand on his gun. He's asking for his license. He's asking this dude to step out of the car. And Khalil steps out of the car. And while, you know, the cop is running his license and his registration and everything, Khalil reaches into the car, and Star, who's been drilled by her father with how to handle yourself around police officers, is pleading with this dude, like, yo, man, just get back outside, man, like, do what this cop is saying and everything. And Khalil's like, man, fuck him, he on some bullshit. Reaches into the car, pulls out a hairbrush to brush his hair, and the cop shoots him 3 times. So, with this particular scene, like, how did you receive that?
I mean, I don't think that there's really so many ways to receive it. I mean, it was what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, it was cringy. Like, you knew what was going to happen, and you were just kind of waiting for it to happen, you know? But I can't remember if that's, like, something that was kind of given away in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because I feel like to give away a big scene like that, they had to be banking on the fact that there was other, like, more moving things in the film. But there weren't. Yeah. There was, like, one other pretty moving scene, but I feel like they kind of fumbled that, too. So, I mean, it was what it was. It was upsetting, you know, to see. But was it... I think I would have been more upset 10 years ago to see. I would have been, like, in shock, probably in tears.
Yeah.
But nowadays, like, you just go to CNN.com and see shit like that.
Okay, so yeah, that was another thing that I was kind of thinking about. Like, we see this sort of shit all the time now.
Yeah.
Like, you can be on Facebook and or Twitter.
I think that's why they gave that away in the in the trailer, because they knew that that wasn't going to have as much shock value as it would probably in the past.
Yeah, we've seen way too many people killed, like, not even trying to see it. Like, I know... like, a lot of folks with, like, Twitter. So, I remember Twitter had, like, where the videos would automatically start. You'd just be scrolling, and the video would automatically start. Same thing with Facebook. They don't necessarily have the sound on, but the videos automatically start as you're scrolling.
Yeah, you can turn that off.
Yeah. And I know, like, it's almost a thing where you can become desensitized to watching someone die. And, I think that was one of the things that was interesting about that. I also thought it was interesting that they would give that plot device away in the trailer. Like, you pretty much know the story.
Well,
like,
I think they kind of, if they didn't, you would have no idea what this movie was about.
I don't know. I feel like they could have kept that out of the trailer.
You would have no idea what they wanted you to feel that this movie was about. Because I think that they could have showed other snippets from other scenes or discussions. But then it's like, am I just going to see, like, a Black Lives Matter propaganda? Or am I going to see a movie that's actually about a certain thing that happens?
I feel like with this film, that a lot of folks were going to see this as a Black Lives Matter propaganda film off top anyway.
I mean, it kind of was.
It really was. Like, I mean, it's a film where... I mean, it's basically kind of a carbon copy of a lot of the things we've seen over the course of the last 3 years. So, like, I mean, I get it, but I guess it goes back to the whole thing of so many of these things in this movie were so telegraphed that I knew what was coming up next. Like, I felt like I could predict this whole fucking film from the time I sat down in my chair.
There was only, like, a couple things that I couldn't predict.
Okay, I guess we'll get to those couple things as we go
through. I could not have predicted the end scene.
No, I don't know if I could have predicted that either, but I also kind of felt like that was a little bit contrived too. But moving along with the story. Of course, Khalil gets killed in front of Star, and, you know, Star goes to the police department and they're asking her questions and everything, but they're more, it seems like, of course, the police are more interested in the fact that Khalil may have been involved in the drug game or whatever, basically trying to make it out as if it was Khalil's fault that he was shot and killed by the cop. Now, you got this look on your face because
is the debate that I have seen, is too much debate. Is it his fault?
Okay, so here's what I'm going with it, because, like, I read something where in the book, they actually kind of changed the scene.
Yeah, in the book, he opens a door and leans inside of the car and is, like, moving around inside of the car.
Right.
Where as opposed to, and he still grabs a hairbrush, but it's just different. Now, as opposed to in the movie, he leans into the window and grabs the hairbrush,
pulls it out,
and is like, I don't know. It's the only way I could explain it is like almost as if he like kind of does like a Dougie, because he like gets the hairbrush and is like leaning up while brushing the side of his head, and then the cop shoots him. But in the book, he like full out walks back to the car, opens the door, is like, "Star, are you okay?" Rustles around and grabs the brush or whatever out of the car. And then stands up and, like, I feel like he stands up and either puts his hands up or he, like, stands up and then is shot.
Okay. Like I said, I don't know because I haven't read the book. I just read that somewhere that there was a scene, like, they changed
it. Yeah, they changed it.
And
they also, this, I don't think in the book that I now, I could be wrong, but I don't think in the book that the cell phone situation happens where he's, like, dropped the cell phone.
Right. So, yeah, because after Khalil was, or basically after he was asked to, like, pull over and everything else, she pulls out her phone. She's trying to videotape the cop, and the cop's like, put the phone away, and she drops the phone. Now, again, we're back at the police station. You know, they're questioning Star. They're asking her all these questions about Khalil, what his, you know, his reputation was like, and his home. And they're, of course, being they're agitated because they're like, okay, what about the cop, though? Like, the cop shot him. You know, why are you asking me all these questions about Khalil? And it turns out that Star's uncle is Common. Also Common. Uncle Carlos.
God.
Is a cop.
They always gotta drag Common bald ass out of the fucking the bushes. Who told Common he was a good actor? God, whoever that person is, drag them out and let them be stoned in the streets. Common never does it for me. Never.
Really?
He is always Common, no matter what.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of true.
And it's not even like I'm like a fucking Common fan or a Common hater or like I'll have like a crush on Common. He just never can be anything. It's like putting fucking Oprah in a movie. In the back of your mind, that's fucking Oprah. Like, Common is just Common. Like, he just has the same fucking voice, the same everything.
Yeah. I could see that.
They just give him a weird mustache here and there.
I could see that. He was definitely Common in John Wick too. So
he's just Common.
Just Common.
Common who can fight. Common who's fight. A cop. Common. Common who like Queen Latifah. Common like he's just fucking Common.
But yeah, so like you know they go there or whatever and. You know, they go through the questioning at the police station, find out, you know, of course, they figure out that, okay, Uncle Carlo, that's her uncle. But Star does something that I thought was very interesting in the fact that, like, she didn't want to tell anybody that that she lost something, like, something traumatic happened to her. As far as, like, her white friends, right?
So when she goes, she didn't.
When she went back to school, like, she's got this boyfriend who really, really likes her, apparently. Like, what's this kid's name?
Chris.
He really likes Star. And he's concerned. He's like, yo, I want to meet your dad. I want to do all these things with you. And she's like, and she's kind of keeping him at arm's length because she kind of knows, you know, it's different on my side. But he's not really understanding because she's not really letting him in all the way.
Which is kind of like a parallel to like white allies nowadays is like you want to trust them and you can see that they're doing, you know, are they doing this for their own? Are they doing this out of the kindness of their heart? Are they doing this because they really feel this? What is your purpose here? Like, right. What's your real reason? And like, can they ever really understand fully like our experience and stuff like that? So like I kind of could draw that parallel as far as like real life situations, but it was frustrating.
Well, not only that though, when you think about her relationship with Haley, you can kind of see why her apprehension was probably justified, because Haley, who is supposed to be one of her best friends, well, at least she proclaims herself to be one of her best friends. Like, I know you like the back of my hand. Like, we've been together all these years or whatever. Like, I know you. We're girls and all this other stuff. But we come to find out later that Haley is actually a racist piece of shit. And that took you.
That escalated quickly.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay. And also in the book, Haley is way more racist.
Yeah, I heard
in
that
the
too.
In the book, there's like a bunch. There's like a lot of tension kind of between them, mm-hmm. And kind of in the movie they play it off as like the same tension that she feels towards her other schoolmates who are just like kind of culture vultures, you know, just picking up bits and pieces of Black culture and claiming it as their own. But in the book, there's a lot more like tension between the two of them.
Yeah. So, she doesn't tell any of her friends that, you know, Khalil was her friend, like very close friend, and that she was there, when it happened, when he was shot by the police. And all I know is like, hey, that happened in your neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
Which, you know, I have watched enough of the Olivia Benson Hour to know that if some shit like this happened, like, unless y'all ass goes, she just went the fuck on home and then went to school and like was about in her neighborhood. Like, they're acting as if these two places, like, you mean nobody fucking else, not a fucking teacher, not a principal, nobody from that school fucking could figure that shit out until they went to like prom or till she did that fucking interview.
Yeah.
No, not true. Like, not fucking true.
Well, I also thought it was very interesting in the fact that like her mom was really adamant about just keeping shit normal.
Yeah, because her mom was like wanting, really into her getting that education, really into her, like, that was her way up out of the hood. Right. Like, and her, you know, she was really, that was like her main concern. Like, they gonna kick her out of this school because of this drama and whatever else. But it's like, if they didn't want people from the hood at the school, like, they didn't say that they use a fake address. Like, the school knows that you're from the hood. So, like, they're aware.
Or maybe she was using Uncle Carlos's address.
No, she wasn't. Because that would have been, they would have said that. Because well, they, yeah. It would have, and it was just kind of like, I don't know. I just didn't understand. And then like the fucking, you know, I'm kind of jumping ahead, which I feel like it's fine. Yeah. But when she did the fucking interview and like they blurred out a circle of her face, but like you could still see her braids. And I feel like her voice was still the fucking same.
Yeah. They didn't modulate her voice at all.
Of course, you know, everybody fucking figures the shit out from that. But it's like,
well, did everybody though?
Well, they alluded to it because everyone was kind of like whispering and staring at her when she went into the prom and shit. Like,
well, I'll say why I question that a little bit later, but you know, the whole idea, like, I really thought it would, like, I get that her mom wanted her to, like, continue to be able to go to that school. I get that she wanted her to get that education as a way to get up out of that neighborhood, which I also thought was, because her dad was adamant about just staying there. Like, this is my hood. I ain't going nowhere. Ain't nobody moving me up out of here. She went to school outside of the neighborhood. She's still living right in the hood with a dude who ain't trying to leave. But also, like, I just felt like it was a little bit insensitive of her mom to, like, kind of just force this whole normalcy thing. Like, yo, she just witnessed her friend die in front of her, and, yo, you going to school.
Or, yeah, yo, she, you like, going, she kind of flip-flopped on that. Like, at first in the police station, she was like, can you give her a minute?
Yeah.
But then it's like, you're going to school, and it was like she kind of...
Yeah, wavering. It was kind of it was kind of like wishy-washy with the motherly love kind of shit going on there. So, you know, what else happens here? I'm drawing off a memory, y'all.
I mean, okay, they go to prom. Well, she goes to prom. The Chris is like, it's you, and shows her the video. That's how I understood that, like, people figured it out from the video.
Okay.
Because yeah. She went to school... yeah, like, she went to school and, you know, no one was giving her, like, grief about it. But then, like, after she goes and does the interview, the video comes out and everyone's, like, fucking looking at their phones and looking at her and whispering and shit.
But before all of that happens, though, King shows up, right? Now, remember, her friend, what's that girl's name again?
Kenya.
Her friend Kenya was, they were walking like to the store or something like that. And her, you know, and, King rolls up in the BMW, the big flashy car. He's like, yo, I'll give y'all a ride down to, you know, Mavericks or whatnot. And Star at first was like, nah, I ain't getting in there. Fuck that. Nah, I ain't doing that. But she eventually, like, gets in the car, like, you know, and, you know, King is basically just trying to pick her, like pick her brain. Like, you know, what did you tell the cops? You know, he's trying to figure out what have you said so far? You know what I mean? Because, of course, we'll find out later that, like, Khalil was dealing drugs for King. That's how he was making money to keep, you know, his grandma bills paid and all these other things. And there's the talk about, you know, having to sell drugs because there are no jobs available and their whole nine. But he's really just trying to fish for information. Like, what have you said? You know, what do cops know? Do they am I implicated in any sort of way? And it's low key a threat, but he's not really saying it like in a threatening manner.
Yeah.
Until he gets to the store and, you know, Star's dad is standing outside the store. He comes and he, you know, because again, these dudes got history. And he's basically telling Maverick, like, yo, man, Star need to shut the fuck up. Like, Star can't be running him off to the police.
Yeah, like, I could have done without that entire piece. I get that they had to do it because they had to, like, tie together, like, the end. And, like, they had to kind of make some kind of, like, tension within the community other than the tension that would be shown at, like, the Black Lives Matter rallies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, I get it, but, like, I could have really done without it. Like, I don't know. It just...
Yeah.
It wasn't it for me.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting when they went to... I don't know if you would call it, like, a wake or anything, but they went over to Khalil's grandma's house. And there was the family gathering there. Everyone was, you know, kind of paying respects and, you know, giving their condolences to Khalil's grandma. I think her name was Miss Rosalie. And she was played by Rhonda Johnson Dents. And they were, you know, they were kind of like, you know, they were paying their respects and everything. And Uncle Carlo shows up in full motherfucking police uniform. Everybody mad at the cops right now. Uncle Carlo shows up as the cops to pay his respects.
Fucking Common. That was probably his idea.
I mean, I get you the cops, man. I get that. But like, yo, man, you couldn't have showed up in like some khakis and a polo, man. Like, you know, you couldn't have showed up like on your day off or something to show, you know, to give those respects. You really had to walk through there with all these people mad as hell at the cops right now because he just died at the hands of the police. And you roll up in there like, you know, I really do love and respect you, Miss Rosalie. And, you know, if there's anything that I can do and me and my wife could do, don't hesitate to call us. You know, the kind of things that folks say that they really don't mean, that they never really follow through on.
I mean, I can't tell if he didn't mean it.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, it is Common. But, I mean, I think that kind of shows, especially living close to Detroit, there are a lot of Black police officers, you know, in Detroit.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of times when, like, I've seen, not that I've been doing anything wrong, but I've seen Black police officers look the other way. And I've seen Black police officers be fucking dicks and, like, overcompensate for the fact that, like, nah, nigga, you not getting over because I'm Black. Like, I'm a policeman first. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, cops that are like, I'm a Black man first. You know what I'm saying? And they handle shit differently. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always been like a fucking running joke between me and like some of my girlfriends. Like, the only, like, when you go downtown Detroit, that's where they put all like the fine cops at, like the fine young cops at. Cause that's all you fucking see. But your ass on motherfucking Southfield or 7 Mile, you gonna get like the fucking Black cops that drive F-150s with American flags on them and shit. Like, you don't get the John James ass police officers.
Not John James.
So, like, I mean, but you know what I'm saying? So he was probably kind of like, oh, this is my hood. Like, I'm from here. These are kids, you know what I'm saying? You know, right, my niece is in this shit. And, you know, her friend that she grew up with is in this shit. And, like, this is my era. These are my people. Yeah. But I'm also a cop.
Right.
So, like, it was probably some of that. But, like, I do agree. He could have, like, fucking put on some goddamn regular clothes.
Yeah, man. I'll roll up in there with your motherfucking
uniform blues, gun, man. Mace, everything.
You got his dress blues on, man. What are you doing? So, that happens. Now, again, Star is still like feeling the effects of, oh, I just lost my friend. I saw him die in front of me. that whole nine. Her mom is insisting that she goes to school, and she gets to school, and these little motherfuckers then decided to use Khalil's death to walk out of class. Like, yo, justice for Khalil. They got fucking flyers and all whole shit. They passing these out. Like, yo, justice for Khalil. They all walking out of class. But really, they don't give a fuck about what happened to Khalil. It was just an excuse for them to get out of class. And this bothers Star quite a bit. Like, this some bullshit. Like, y'all don't really care what happened to him. And, like, it was funny because, what's that girl's name? Haley?
Yeah.
Was like, you know, did you know him? Like, you know, did you?
I thought she might have knew it.
I thought she, yeah, like, because basically, because what happened? Something she put on Tumblr. Like, yeah. With, you know, like, you know, people who had been met with death at the hands of either the cops or racism, you know, and Haley unfollowed her on
Tumblr. I just also found it strange. Okay. And I'm also, can I just say, if we want people to know or to be aware of more people that have been murdered by the police, we gotta stop showing, like, the same three people and Emmett Till. Like, do you not feel like they every time it's like the same three names and then Emmett Till? Like, I found it strange that was her post on Tumblr. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they could have did a little bit more. Like, just give a couple more scrolls. Give some more names, like, some more representation of, like, of those people. But, I don't know. That's just a little tidbit.
I think that, I mean, of course, like, you know, the whole thing with Emmett Till, it was one of those instances of, like, brutality in a way that everyone was able to see. And how it how his mom attempted to try to change attitudes surrounding what was going on, and I think that's why the image of Emmett Till even today, although you know it may not necessarily have the same gravity, it may not necessarily have the same meaning for a lot of these younger kids who aren't versed in that history, but I think that's where that idea comes from. Truth be told, like, I don't want to keep seeing images of, you know, black people met with death at the hands of the cops. Like, I don't want to keep seeing that. I kind of wanted to go the opposite way.
I mean, if you went to go see this movie, bought your ticket knowing that's what you were going
to
see.
I don't think... See, again, I think with going to see this movie, of course I was interested in seeing this movie only in the sense of I want to see how they encapsulate what's going on today. Like, that's pretty much what I was getting from it. Like, okay, they were going to try to encapsulate what's going on with this. Of course, it's a fictional story, but I wanted to see how they tried to tie this all together. The only thing about it was I felt like I could predict everything that was going on. Like, mm-hmm. That's pretty much why, like, I was kind of disappointed in the film. Like, I could predict damn near everything that was about to happen. Mm. So they have this, you know, they have the walkout and everything else. Star's not feeling it. You know, she calls her uncle to come pick her up from school, takes her to the hospital.
Does she yell at Haley then?
No.
Or is that later?
That's later. She walks off from Haley and her other friend. She walks off from them after she's, you know, she's like, girl, you didn't want to take that psych test either, you know? Like, she's just kind of like over them. Like, yo, this is some bullshit. Y'all don't even know why y'all mark. Y'all just trying to get the fuck out of class.
No, I really feel like that's when she yells at her.
That's not.
Okay.
That's not. It comes later.
Okay.
It comes later. So, they leave. I mean, you know, she leaves or whatever. And, you know, maybe you might be right.
No, because it's then, like, they're at the other friend's house. They play the video game.
Okay.
And then she's like, are you just going to,
Yeah. Okay. So, so what happens next? They black nigga, I don't know, nigga.
Right, you the one that be seen by seeing it.
I tried, but you know, it's been a couple days, baby. So, what happens after that?
She goes. She sees her mom. Her mom's like, "Why are you not at school?" Blase splee.
Not blase splee.
Then something else happens.
Not blase splee. No, I think what was that? Her boyfriend, man, is really like putting on the. he's putting on the, like, yo, what's going on with you sort of thing. Like, I really want to come, you know, see you. I want to meet your dad. You could tell me what's going on. And she's really just kind of like withdrawing away from all of her white friends. She's kind of like withdrawing a little bit from everybody because she's a little pissed at her mom for making her keep going to school throughout this whole shit. I think the only person she really doesn't really withdraw from is her father. I think she connects more with her father as the film continues to go. So after the whole like staged walkout and everything at the school, damn it.
Let's just skip to the prom because neither one of us knows what the fuck else happens. I know that there's a scene sometime and they're sitting down eating at a chicken place.
Oh, okay. So what happens, like, no, the funeral. So they go to Khalil's funeral and that becomes a whole, you know, rallying cry to get the, you know, the neighborhood involved. Oh, yeah, involved.
That's why fucking Issa Rae come up there with all her teeth.
Stop it.
No shade. I really like Issa Rae, they could have got somebody else.
Okay.
She did not do a good job. And I like her. And I like her show. And I've liked her since she was on YouTube. So it's not like I'm just trying to shade the girl. But she just didn't do a good job.
Okay.
You think she did a good job? Or are you scared to talk about Issa Rae?
I'm not scared to talk about anybody. I just thought like... They came in like with all her teeth. Like, goddamn.
I'm sorry. That is the joke. She does have, she has a beautiful smile, but there's a lot.
So I thought like the whole funeral scene, I thought that was like, again, I felt like, yo, do we really need to like, yo, at the funeral, like, yo, so they decided they wasn't going to indict, you know, this officer. No, that's
not when that happened.
Yeah, she did. She told them that they
oh, yeah.
At this point, Star had.
Why? That's like if something happens to one of us and like, what's the nigga with the vest that's always
DeRay McKesson?
Yes, that's like I invite him to the damn funeral and the pastor gets up there like, all right, now DeRay and his vest about to come up here and talk about some shit to y'all, so here you go. Like, why? This is a funeral. Yeah,
well, and that was the thing. Like, the family had requested that she come and speak, and that they were
going to have a demonstration. I wish I fucking might.
They were going to have a demonstration, and, you know, of course, then there was, like, that awkward-ass scene where, like, Seven's mom is in the back with King, and he's up in the front with, like, Star and the rest of the family, but his mom was like, come back here with us! Come back here with us! In the middle of a fucking funeral and shit, like... It was a lot, man.
There was too much going on.
It was a lot.
Too much that I didn't like.
I'm like, come on, man. So they have like this big ass demonstration where, of course, you know, there's the Justice for Khalil at the funeral and everything. And they're, you know, like there was supposed to be a peaceful protest, but of course it didn't necessarily stay peaceful. You know, there was a little back and forth between the police and the protesters and everything. And, I think like somebody somebody got hit with something at that particular demonstration. And that's when her father was like, yo, we got to get the fuck out of here. We got
to leave. Yeah. And then is that when they go to get the chicken?
No, they go to get the chicken when they were after Star went to the news.
Oh yeah.
Because at this particular point, Issa Rae's character, whose name is
something Ofrin.
Yeah. April Ofra. Ofra. Okay. So April Ofra.
Who fucking made that up?
April Ofra recognizes Star at the funeral. And it is like her mom was like, how the fuck does she know?
You
know,
okay.
Like, how does she know that she's the witness? And you know, her dad is like, well, maybe Miss Rosalie told her or whatever. But even still, like, unless you point out a picture, how does she know? And she shows up at their house and she's like, yo, you need to speak for Khalil. You need to go, you know, and tell your story. Let everybody know what was going on. And Star is kind of like on the fence about it. Her daddy wanted to say something.
Yeah, Star never really, you could tell she doesn't know what to do.
Right.
And so her mom is like, no, because of the school. But her dad is like, black power, basically, in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Like, her dad is like, no, you need to do this. Like, I didn't name you Star for nothing. Like, whatever else. So, but she never really didn't really feel like I ever caught, like, if she wanted to say something or what she really felt, I think she kind of deferred to her parents whenever it was kind of like brought up that she needed to say something.
Well, I think after that particular scene, I think she was leaning towards saying something because she talked about that other friend that was with her and Khalil when they were younger. And she talked about the fact that that friend was killed in front of her, and she know who killed her, but she never said anything about it. And her parents were like, we didn't know that you knew all of that. And she said, like, you know, I felt like, what kind of friend am I? Because I never said anything.
Yeah.
And I felt like at that moment, she had already made the decision that she was going to say something, but then her mama kind of shut that shit down. Was like, nah, you're not saying nothing. And she took April Ofer's card and she like, okay, thank you. You know, just kind of shut that whole thing down. But her father was just on some, yeah, she need to talk. So after that, they do make the decision to go and speak to the press and everything. And, you know, here's the whole thing where like they blur her face, but you can still see her braids. I don't know if they modulated her voice or not on the interview or whatever. I don't think they did. And, you know, like even in the interviewer was just on some like, so what about Khalil? You know, he was out here selling drugs, you know, and, he wasn't on the up, he wasn't no angel, you know? And she was just like, yo man, like what about
girl?
Well, all right, Google, you can shut up now. but but damn, this shit threw me off. But like, she's basically like, this is where Star kind of, I guess, finds her groove and like, yo, why do you keep asking me about Khalil and these things about Khalil when we should be talking about the officer who shot him and didn't need to and all these things. And then afterwards, that's when they go to dinner at this restaurant. And King is at the restaurant, outside the restaurant.
Standing outside menacingly.
Yeah, you know, like being, like trying to intimidate them or whatever because he's got two of his goons with him and shit. And this is only, I think he's there because, of course, Star names like him in this interview. Like she goes,
she doesn't name him. She says
the King Lords.
The King Lords.
But everybody associates the King Lords with him. So, like she goes on television, she names the King Lords. So like, yeah, Khalil was selling drugs to the King Lords and everybody knows it, yada, yada, yada. And this is where I was like, yo, everybody in the neighborhood is watching this, right? Like you see people in the barbershop watching this. You see people at like the store watching this. They at home watching this. And it just kind of like, who, they, it's like they trying to figure out who it is, but they don't know who it is. But of course, King knows exactly who the fuck it is, and he shows up at this restaurant. And, you know, basically, Maverick wasn't no punk. He's like, yo, man, fuck this shit. Like, hey, y'all sit right here. He goes outside, and, you know, he was like, yo, man, what Star did was really fucked up. He was like, they get into a little scuffle. They get ready to fight. Police pull up. King gets out of Dodge with him and his goons. Meanwhile, Maverick is left to deal with the cops. He's like, you know, I ain't an officer. You know, I'm just out here talking with, you know, some friends or whatever. And, you know, they rough up Maverick in front of his family, pushes them all up against the, you know.
Yeah, but then Star comes out this time like she's not backing down. She's right. Gonna record this shit. And like the look on the officer's face when she was like, I have a right to record you.
Yeah.
It like he was like, that's well, shit.
No, he was like, that's the witness.
Yeah.
And that's when he said, that's the witness. I'm like, come on, bro. Like, I sat there like, come on, man. Really? Like, and they just like, all right. But it wasn't just her with the phone out. Everybody in the restaurant had their phone out. But when he told her to put the phone away, she's like, I have a right to record you. And he's like, that's the witness. And he got spooked and she like, well, you know, we'll just let you off with a warning. Like, man, get the fuck out of here. You know? Just, oh, my God. Like, come on, man. So, like, now she goes back to school after this, and, like, her, you know, well, she goes to prom. Yeah. Go to prom, and everybody at prom is just kind of like, you know, they're pointing at her and shit. Everybody just kind of looking away and looking at her, looking away and all this other stuff. And she gets with Chris, and Chris is like, why didn't you tell me? You know, like what the fuck, Star? Like, I should know, man. I'm your boyfriend, all this other stuff. She's like, yo, man, like, and she's basically breaking down to him, like, yo, there is a difference in how our communities kind of see these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to come to school and meet the poor black girl who saw her friend die when I come to school. I want to just kind of go to school without all of this pity or judgment or whatever. And this is why I didn't tell you. This is why I kind of kept things away from you.
Yeah, and then he hits her with, like, I don't see color.
Yeah, you know.
That whole, like, I don't see color. And then she comes back with, like, if you don't see my blackness, you don't see me. I'm like, oh, my God. God.
Like, yeah.
That was cringy. Yeah,
it was a bit cliche. You know what I'm saying? But, of course, this cements Chris as, like, you know, down for the cause white boy. Because Chris, like, you know what? I got you, boo. You know what I'm saying? I see you.
Yeah.
He says, he's like, I see you.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, now everybody, like, Chris is that dude now. Chris didn't get, like, the stamp of approval, so to speak. But he's insistent on meeting her daddy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, goes.
Which is admirable.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Right. Meet Pops and, you know, everybody knew Chris was white, but Pops. And they he like, everybody do this but me? Like, why am I the last to know? And they were like, come on, man.
I wonder why.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah, you would be the last to know if...
if Key Maya get a boyfriend?
If she gets a white boyfriend, especially.
I ain't racist.
You'll still be the last to know.
You think so?
Hell yeah!
You think Key Maya wouldn't tell me if she had a white boyfriend?
I don't think she would tell you if she had a boyfriend.
No, she probably wouldn't. I tell her she could tell me, but
she keeps
telling me, she like, I don't like none of these boys. I'm like, come on, baby. You
like, I wouldn't tell your ass neither.
Why?
Nigga, for what? So you can harass him?
I'm not going to harass him.
Carry on with this damn movie.
All right. So I feel like we skipped over the part where, like, they came home and shit, and he started talking about, we did. When they came home from the restaurant, and...
Yeah, then the house gets shot up.
Yeah. But no. This happens before.
Okay.
This happens before because after they leave the restaurant, they come home and she's like, shit, I had not said anything. Mm-hmm. And that's when he goes into the whole thing about I named you.
Oh, by any means necessary.
He wants them to recite the Black Panther 10-point program and, you know, I gave you guys names. You got to live up to your names and the whole thing. Nice scene. I saw it coming though. Like, it was like a lot of this stuff was telegraphed. But we get to the point where, we get to this point where basically she testifies in front of the grand jury. The grand jury decides that they are not going to indict the officer who shot Khalil, right? And so, like, everybody in Garden Heights is pissed. Everybody's on edge. They're going to demonstrate. They're going to march. And this is like right after her house got shot up. Because again, King actually did shoot their house up in order to get her to shut up from running them, you know, from talking to the press, get her, keep her from talking to the police and everything else. So they're basically in the middle of this demonstration. And before they get to the demonstration, though, wait, was it before or after where they, okay, it was after. They're at this demonstration. Wait, I feel like I'm skipping something. Her brother gets his ass whooped. King beats her brother up. Mm-hmm. And they go over there to go pick him up. Her mom kind of, like, his mom kind of, like, sets up a diversion.
Oh, yeah, because... Then she goes to school, and this is when she, like, yells at Haley with the hairbrush and shit, and then she runs away, and Chris follows her, and then they're in the car or something, and then Kenya calls and says Seven got beat up, and then they go to the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, what did you think, we kind of skipped that, too. What did you think about that scene where she was kind of basically getting at, what's that girl named Haley?
Yeah, I liked that. That was one scene that I thought was, I liked that scene. Because, you know, I think that Star, I think she did a good job there. I thought that scene was really, like, passionate and, like, almost like you wanted to look away. Like, it was kind of awkward, but, like, in, like, a way where, like, it was uncomfortable with something that you needed to see, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked that scene.
That was probably my favorite scene in the movie. because like it was one of those instances where like, you know, Haley was saying a bunch of this, you know, a lot of the stereotypical shit that the all lives matter motherfuckers will say.
That poor like, cop and his, you know, family. What about
his family? And, you know, his family is going through things too. Like, but this motherfucker is still walking around alive and well and able to, you know, be with his family. Meanwhile, Khalil is gone. And you're talking about, you know, what about his family? And he's just doing his job. And you're supposed to be the friend of this girl who, you know, for all intents and purposes, like, that's supposed to be your girl. And you're really not giving a fuck about how she's feeling in this moment. And for her to say, like, yo, he had, you know, the hairbrush could be seen as a weapon and everything else. And for her to pull the hairbrush out of Haley's book bag and basically, you know, scare the fuck out of Haley. Haley thought she was about to get her ass whooped.
Yeah.
That's what that was. And she's on the ground. She's crying and shit. And, like, she's only getting maybe a tenth of what the level of fear that, you know, a lot of people in the neighborhood have when they're dealing with the cops.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, getting back to the demonstration, you know, they're having that demonstration, and this is what would you call it? The crescendo, you know, where there's the clash between the police and the demonstrators, and this is where Star decides that she's going to reveal herself as the witness who saw what happened to Khalil.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just kind of like stops and, you know, starts paying attention to her. And April Ofra hands her the megaphone, and she's, you know, she talks about, you know, what happened to Khalil and how Khalil lived. Everybody talks about how he died, but what about how Khalil lived? And, you know, that becomes the more powerful scenes in the film. It was kind of like, you know, because at this point the police are just like, all right, we're about to disperse all these people. We're gonna start throwing tear gas, we're gonna start using our batons, we're gonna start using these shields and beating people back. And while all of this is happening, King is trying to lure Maverick to the store, because King is still upset with the fact that Star talked to the police. Star revealed herself to be the witness to what everything mm-hmm. that happened. He's trying to lure Maverick to the store, so they set fire to the store. I think, as a matter of fact, Star and her brother was in the store because her brother was still fucked up from that beating.
Yeah, and then they got the tear gas hit them. Yeah, and they went to the store to get
milk for his eyes.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, go to the store, and, you know, we see other businesses in the neighborhood, like the people are sitting kind of guarding their businesses, like trying to let people know, like, this is black owned. Right. Like, we see kind of all that going on. So they see Star and Seven go into the store, and then he's like, oh, like, go, you know what I'm saying? They
throw the store.
Fight the firebomb in the store, and, you know, it's looking dire for a minute, like, oh shit, like they can't get out the back door, the front door is on fire, the people from the, you know, the other business owners come and they're like, oh, try to get them out.
They couldn't get him out until Maverick showed up.
And I don't understand how he just showed up.
Well, I'm sure someone told him his store was on fire.
Well, yeah, because he, like, pulls up, he's like, oh, shit, like, gets out, you know, gets them out.
Yeah.
I can't remember what happened.
Well, at this point, King comes out, you know, because he's like, oh, I got my target right here. So let me go on over here, handle my business. And Star's there with Seven, and the two other store owners from the neighborhood are there. And I'm trying to figure out how the hell her little brother got there, because I don't remember how Sakani got there.
I don't remember. I feel like there's something we're missing, because either they went back to something happened to where the mom, all of them show up.
Okay, so here's what we're missing. We're missing this part. Their house gets shot up.
Yeah.
And they go to Uncle Carlos's house.
Yeah.
They were at Uncle Carlos's house, and this is where Star has a conversation with Uncle Carlos about perceived threats with black people and the police.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how, you know, if I'm dealing with people in the hood, I shoot.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in the well-to-do neighborhood, I say, put your hands up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Star is really like, all right, I know what I got to do. And that's when she becomes really activated and she wants to go get the ball.
She goes on the bike.
And as they were, but before that happens, though, her father was like, after the shooting happens, like, no, I'm going back home.
Yeah.
And Seven goes with him.
Yeah.
I'm going back home. And they stand guard at the house while all this is going on. I still don't understand how Seven, I mean, I'm sorry, how Sekani got to the store when he did, when, unless, of course, the whole family shows up.
I think the whole family showed up.
I think so, too.
I think the whole family showed up.
You can
up.
Tell we ain't seen this shit in a couple days, and we should have probably
yeah,
seen
I mean, that. I think the whole family... Case in whatever, the whole family somehow shows up. There's a fucking kerfuffle between King and Maverick.
Yeah.
And you see Maverick reaching kind of like towards like the back of his pants, like reaching for his gun, right. And he can't find it. So I'm thinking like, oh shit, like he left the shit at home, it fell somewhere, or like whatever else. But cut to Sekani, who's like 7 or 3, I don't know, he 5, 6, whatever, he's a young boy.
Yeah.
Cut to him and he is pointing the gun at King like, don't hurt my daddy.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the oh shit moment. That was something I could not have predicted. I didn't see that coming at all. That came out of nowhere.
That was the one thing I did not see coming.
Yeah.
Was, Sekani having the gun and pointed it, and then the police roll up. And, of course, they got their guns drawn, and they're pointed dead at Sekani.
Yeah.
And we get hit over the head again with the hate you give.
Little infants fucks everybody.
It's like, I got it, but still. Like, that whole thing of, again, like, saying the name of the movie in the movie is just kind of like, all right, bro. But... this is where Star, being the hero of the film, puts herself in between her brother and the cops. Sekani puts the gun down. She gives a really powerful speech. Like, when will it be enough? You know, how many of us have to die for y'all to get it? And then the cops put their guns down. And for whatever reason, King put his gun down. Well, I guess because the cops was there. But King puts his gun down.
There it is.
King puts his gun down. Everybody kind of like walks away from the situation. We find out later that King gets arrested because, you know, the other shopkeep owners in the neighborhood dimed him out. Like, yo, that's the motherfucker that firebombed the store, and they're going to help Maverick rebuild. And, you know, life kind of goes on.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of led to believe that, like, Star, you see her, and she has, like, her natural hair out.
Yeah.
She's still with the boyfriend. But yeah. I want to draw attention to a point that is something, I don't know why I always pay attention to this. Did you notice how when she was with black people, or she was, like, in the hood, everything was, like, warm and golden? But when she was at the school, everything was kind of washed out or whatever? So then we kind of get this kind of scene where she's at the school with her boyfriend, and then like the sun's kind of shining on, like things are like warm and golden.
Yeah.
Like now, you know, things are okay.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. So, if you had to give this movie some stars, babe, how many would you give?
I don't know. I guess I would give it like 3 stars.
What?
I mean, because.
That means it was good.
No. That means it was okay.
Okay would be 2.
No, I mean, okay, I'm giving it 3 stars, but I probably would give it 2 stars, but I'm giving it an extra star for, like, the content.
Okay.
For, like, what it was supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm giving them credit for that. Because representation matters. We do need, you know, there were more white people than black people in the theater. And I think it's important for white people, young and old, to see films, TV shows, and everything with this subject matter. I think that's important. So, like, I will give it that. Like, they did make it, a lot of it was easier to consume for white people, because there are some nuances and things that we might understand about, like, the hood or about gangs and stuff like that, that your average suburban white person may not understand that. So, you know, they did rely heavily on, like, the tropes and the stereotypes or whatever else. But, I mean, I think some of that was so that it was more consumable by people other than us. Okay. So, I'm giving them credit. I'm kind of letting them off easy for that. I do think there was just, like, some cringy scenes that were just, like, it was just overacted, underacted, just didn't fit well. So, I mean, I gave it a 3.
All right. I'm going to give it 2 stars. I thought the movie was okay. I walked out of that theater a little bit disappointed in what I saw. Like, I guess, I don't know. I don't know why I expected more, but I did. Mm. I kind of just expected more. I think the stereotypical, like the stereotypes, I was just kind of like, eh. The predictability of the film, I was kind of like, eh. Like, I felt like I should, as much as I'm kind of into this, like this political climate and like covering it and like watching, paying attention to what's happening with it, I still felt like, man, I shouldn't be able to like just telegraph or know what's about to happen.
But
with these particular,
do you think that you were able to do that because this is something that you like read a lot about, you talk a lot about it?
I think so.
And I think that definitely colors that had to do with it. I think also like some of like, you know, being a Black person, there were certain things that we just kind of understood and we didn't need to be told the things.
Right.
Like, for instance, that her kind of explaining about her dad's store. Like, we know what a corner store is. We know. We didn't need the explanation of, like, you go there to get your gossip, your hot Cheeto. Like, we didn't need that. Mm-hmm. But someone who wasn't raised around that or didn't have that in their neighborhood, you know what I'm saying, they're like, so it's like a 7-Eleven or is it like Speedway or like there's no gas station? Like, they don't know what the fuck is going on.
I get all of that, and I'm not even, you know, I understand that, you know, of course everything isn't, you know, I get you trying to, you know, make the message accessible to everybody.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, for me, I just was like, and I get it, but I still kind of like, I wish they hadn't done that. Like, yeah, certain things. I just felt like I felt like I was going to get more and I didn't.
I mean, I also do have to say that some of this, the feelings that we're feeling, is because it was PG-13. The movie was. Mm. So it wasn't like a full on R-rated film where they're going to go hardcore. There's going to be like cursing, mad violence, lots of, you know, more gut-wrenching displays of incidents happening. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like it was a film that it's geared towards younger people.
Definitely.
Because it was PG-13.
Definitely.
Now, if it had been, I'm trying to think of, what's the movie with, is it Lawrence Fishburne and, like, Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Boys in the Hood?
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking of, like, the kind of rawness of that, mm-hmm, kind of a film juxtaposed against this kind of film where it was PG-13. It is, I think to me, it's a teen movie. So like, it doesn't hold up against films that kind of, that were R and that did kind of take it there.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point, because I did see an interview on like YouTube and they were interviewing like a bunch of teenage girls.
Yeah.
And like, these girls were affected deeply by the film, like,
yeah,
to the point of tears, from what they saw. And I think one of the young ladies was talking about, she's dealt with gun violence within her own family. Like, she saw a friend of hers get shot. And so like, that brought back memories of that within her own experience and everything.
Yeah.
So I think, although it may not necessarily have been the movie that I wanted it to be, but it definitely could have been a movie for a younger audience, in a way that they could connect to
and
latch on to and basically feel like it was a film speaking to their generation.
Yeah, like, as someone who is less informed about, like, current events and this kind of subject matter,
mm-hmm,
I think it was easier for me to, like, kind of consume it, whereas your expectation was higher because, like, you know, you've watched the videos and stuff. Like, I've consciously avoided when things have happened, I consciously avoided, like, when, was it Philando Castile, where his, mm-hmm, girlfriend
went on Facebook.
I have never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I consciously avoid things like that. So for someone like me, like, it did, there were, you know, the scenes, you know, they were like gut wrenching. It did like kind of awaken something in me. But for someone like you, who's kind of, I don't want to say desensitized, but you're more, you are, you have seen more and you've kind of like invested more or looked into it more, to where you seeing that may not be as like shocking to you. You know what I'm saying? But there's people in the theater who were like, oh my God, you know, mm-hmm. and younger people who may or may not, like a 13-year-old. I don't know if 13-year-olds are, if your mom and dad are strict and you're not on Facebook and you're not seeing CNN or news and stuff like that, you're not looking into these type of videos, like this may be some shit that you ain't never, you know what I'm saying? You might be in tears after seeing right. something like this. So yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I guess, like I said, I think I went into this movie with high expectations. And I guess I just didn't get what I thought I was going to get. But I still give this movie, I give it 2 stars.
All right, cool.
So we're about to wrap this on up. And we're going to do this again when, babe?
Like, I'm not sure, but we had some other things we wanted to talk about, remember?
Oh, yeah. So check this out, y'all. I actually may edit this and put this shit at the front.
Okay.
Well, check this out, man. So, Mrs. Spam made a life change, y'all.
Yeah.
I am the only iPhone owner in this house. How the fuck does that happen?
Through work.
Well, yeah, through work. But, babe got rid of the iPhone and got her a Note 9. How's that Note 9 life, babe?
It's kind of awful.
What?
I'm having a really hard time. I'm having a really hard time. I will say that. I am having a really, really, really hard time. I barely know how to like make a phone call. I am just having a really hard time. It's very different. This is a lot. There are a lot of things to learn. There are many, many choices to make. There are bells and whistles and things going off all the time. And I have no idea what it is. It's hard.
Okay. So as a seasoned.
And let me just preface this by saying I've had every iPhone that there has been.
Really?
Yeah. I have had all of the iPhones. So... And I think for a brief time, I had a Sidekick.
I met you when you had a BlackBerry.
Yeah. So.
You had a BlackBerry Bold, I think.
Yeah. Like I've had, but then like once, you know, I got into iPhones, maybe I didn't have the very first iPhone, but the second one I had it. So like I've had iPhones for like years. This is years of iPhone time. And I have an iMac, a MacBook, not an iMac. I have a MacBook Pro, a MacBook Air, an iPad,
yeah, an Apple really, Watch. She's really bought into that ecosystem, man. Like,
I have had all of the Apple
She
things.
Really bought into the ecosystem.
iPods, all of that.
Yeah. I had one Apple product that I liked, and it was an iPod. I had an iPod Touch. And once I figured out that I can do everything that I wanted to on that iPod Touch, that I could do that on like my Android G1, I'm like, why the fuck do I even have this?
Yeah. And it's always been, I have never been the type of person that was like, oh, I just feel like Apple is so much better.
But I know so many.
I am not that person. I feel like it's different. I feel like there are, for some people, you know, there are things that are great about both, and there are things that are bad about both. And I am now experiencing the other side. And I will just say, it's difficult. When you thought things were going to be easy peasy, lemon squeezy, but they're lemon, difficult, difficult.
I think, and I'm not trying, I really don't want to like diminish your, the difficulty that you're having with the change. But I do think that things aren't as hard. I think because it's so much change that it could be a lot coming at you at once.
It's not that it's like I'm dumb or I can't do it.
I didn't say that.
It's not that it's just very different. Right. That's what I'm saying. When you're going from like having the same pretty much phone, like even with going from like having like a home button to not having a home button, like that was easy, you know, from going from.
Now you have a home button again.
Not really. Yeah, not in the same sense of like having an actual button. So going from that to like the iPhone 10, you know what I'm saying? I thought that was going to be hard, but I got that shit together in like 2 days. Like that was quite easy. This is, it's just a whole other type of animal. It is, there is no, and now, you know, everyone texts and drives or looks at their phone and drives and whatever else. Now there is none of that shit for me because I would crash, burn, and die if I try to look at this damn phone while doing any. I gotta sit on the couch and damn near put my glasses on to get into this shit. I don't know what the fuck is going on. So it's,
we gonna get it together.
The camera's good.
We gonna get it together. Cause I mean, like, truth be told, babe, like, first of all, one thing I really do want to say, I did not make you do this. As a matter of fact, I didn't even prompt you to do this. Like, man, you should go ahead and get you a note.
No, you didn't.
I didn't do any of that.
You didn't. All of this started because I fucking lost my headphones. And I was at work. And, at, you know, I go to work at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'm at work. And I'm doing a lot of things alone. So I like to listen to podcasts or listen to music or whatever on my headphones. So for 2 days, I had no fucking headphones. But I hear everybody coming up to me, oh, I have some extras. Oh, you can use these. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no, I can't. So I don't have a fucking dongle. And I don't want to go buy a goddamn dongle to use some damn headphones. And I don't know how to pay for no Apple headphones. So it all started from there. And then I was just like, you know what? I just feel like I'm just trapped in this, like, in this Apple kind of ecosystem. I will not say that I regret it, but I am having a hard time. Well, that's all I'll say.
Like I said, babe, like it's a lot to take in. If you're used to doing things a certain way for so long,
like 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I remember when I decided I was going to like play around with an iPhone. Like, you know what? I'm going to switch up.
And you get lasted an iPhone. For like a day.
It didn't even last a day, babe. It was 30 minutes. That shit was 30 minutes.
And part of it is you were coming from a place of like, you were accustomed to having choices. I'm coming from a place where like, I thought I had choices, but apparently I didn't have no type of fucking choices.
No, Apple pretty much tells you what the fuck you
want. I got to make all these fucking choices. And I don't know how many times in like that first night where I was like, can I see what yours looks like? I just want mine to look like yours.
And that was the funny thing too, because my response to that, every time she would ask me, I said, well, I set mine up to look this way. And she's like, well, how did you get that right like that? Like, because I set mine up.
And I'm just sitting here like, well, nigga, set my shit up.
Well, here's the thing. She was saying set mine up like that, but she also wanted to do her own thing.
Because and I so want to learn.
Okay, so it was like, yo, that's your phone. I'm not going to just take your phone and give you a carbon copy of my phone and just be like, okay, well, this is how I do things on my phone. Because you got the phone. You could do with it whatever you wish.
Right. Because, well, for me, I'm looking at it like, well, this nigga is the fucking expert.
I mean, I can tell
I'm
you.
I'm not about to sit here and watch a YouTube tour.
So check this out.
When I come fucking knock on the office door and be like, hey, nigga.
So check this out. So I kind of was like, I've made it a point when I come home from work now, like, so babe, did you need any help with your phone? Or did you learn anything new about your phone today?
I'm like, to the point where I'm like, I'm kind of fucking burnt out. So I've stopped trying to fucking do shit or fix shit. I'm just like, all right, whatever. No, I got 10 contacts in my phone.
See, here's the thing.
Don't know how I got them in there.
Here's the thing. I have no problem paying for apps. My wife has an aversion to paying for apps. She's like, nah.
Yeah, man. You want to put your credit card in here on this and I'll go ahead and get all the apps. I'll pay for a lot of stuff.
Nah.
Go ahead and line it up.
See, check this out. Truth be told, like, the apps don't cost a lot of money. Like,
but it adds up.
Over time. I probably spent over $500 on apps in 10 years, though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
nigga, I probably spent $5.99 on apps over 10 years. Yeah. So,
like, you're like, well, how'd you get your text messaging to look like that? Well, you know, there's this texture app that I use, and I can make it look however I want. Does my texture look like your texture? How do you send GIFs? And it was like, okay, so here's what you do. Or... So it's been a thing. Just,
there's a lot when you're it's going when you're really accustomed to something for so long. This is a lot.
Yeah.
And I have always stood by saying, like, this is like the stereotype that Apple and iPhones are for just like whoever, like, you know, I'm saying the cool kids, and Android phones are for like the nerds, because you gotta fucking concentrate and be smart to work this shit.
No, you don't.
Don't believe what if you, you don't believe what he says.
You don't.
You do. Like, you so have to be like technically kind of inclined, or you have to have not been used to Apple products for so long, because that's the handicap.
Here's the kicker, though. You could actually make an Android phone sort of kind of work like an iPhone.
I feel like mine kind of does, the way that I use it. Mm-hmm. Like how you had shown me how to set up that screen with like the widgets or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't ever use that. I just go straight to like, where's all my apps, because I'm used to seeing all the fucking apps there.
Yeah, so like maybe when she first gets, she's like, so where's my app? She's like, okay, so here's the app drawer. Swoop. And then sometimes you open up Samsung Pay.
Every fucking time. And then the goddamn side thing. I just learned how to cut that shit off, the little contact side.
Oh, Bixby?
No, there's like a little thing. If you slide to the left, there's like all your contacts will show up, or like recently used. I don't know. Something.
Yeah, because I haven't seen
that. Cut that shit off. Like, because I was always trying to. There's just a lot of swiping. There's a lot of fucking finding the settings little wrench thing. There's just a lot of a lot. It's a lot. It is a lot.
Well,
but my picture's about to be popping.
Yeah. I actually been thinking about getting a Pixel phone, though. All
right. Anyway, I feel like that's it.
All right,
like
y'all.
We've done enough. We're
going to get up out of here. We'll talk to y'all soon. Till next time. Peace.
Bye.